Midrash tells us that after everything that Adam Rishon had done, and after all the damage that had been brought to the world, still Misa should not have been Nigzar. Still Hashem said death was not fully warranted, and if it could be, Hashem felt that Adam Rishon should live. But the Midrash explains to us that there was a different consideration and a different reason why Misa had to be decreed, and that was because of later Rishonim. Explains the Midrash Rabbah, Amar Rabbi Mechanina, because of Nebuchadnezzar, Chiram, and various Rishonim, Hashem had to decree Misa, even though Adam Rishon didn't deserve it in and of himself. There would be future Rishonim, and because of that, Hashem decreed death upon man. Frek Rabbi Yochanan, fine, decree man, decree death upon the Rishonim. But why are you decreeing it on the Tzaddikim? Meaning, if Adam Rishon didn't warrant death, if mankind didn't warrant death, you're going to have later generations where there'll be Rishonim. Let the Rishonim die. Let the Tzaddikim live, and let the Rishonim die. There shouldn't be death for the Tzaddikim. Answers the Gemara, that effectively, answers the Midrash, that effectively all of the Rishonim would say, oh, look at that. Tzaddikim live, Rishonim die. All of the Rishonim would do Maisim Tovim. They would all learn. They would all do what they should do, but not Lishma, but they would do it to live. And therefore, Hashem had to decree death upon both. The Marzu explains to us what's going on here. It says the Marzu as follows. Really, Hashem put Adam Arishon into Gan Eden. He was supposed to live for eternity, and that should have remained that way. However, because of this act, he changed the world. Hashem said, I'd like to decree Misa only on the Rishonim who will come from him, but if I do that, everyone will lose free will. Why? Because if a person sees that if you serve Hashem properly, you live, and if you sin, you die, all people would lose free will, both the Rishonim and the Tzaddikim. And the Rishonim would lose free will. Why? Because if you serve Hashem, you do mitzvahs, you live. Obviously, they're going to do what they're supposed to do, not to serve Hashem, but they're going to do it to live. But the Tzaddikim also would have the same motivation. And the Tzaddikim would say, listen, obviously I have to serve Hashem, obviously I have to do what I'm supposed to, because I too will die. Says the Marzu, what this Medrash is telling us is that effectively everyone would lose Bechira, there would be no free will, everyone would serve Hashem, everyone would do mitzvahs, but not because Hashem wants us to, not because it's the right thing to do, but because otherwise I would die, otherwise I'd get sick and end up no longer being here, and therefore everyone will lose free will. And that's the Medrash. And if we think about this Medrash, I believe that this is a Medrash Plia, a very, very difficult Medrash to understand, and I'll explain to you in just a minute why. If you think about it, there are two reasons why we sin. If you analyze why is it that we're not all total, absolute tzaddikim, there are two reasons. The first reason is temptation, and the second reason is confusion. Let's deal with the first, temptation. Temptation means I desire something, but I don't. I want it, and I don't want it. I sort of say it's wrong, but I also want it. That's called taiva, and it cuts across the gamut of the human activity. It could be for physical pleasures. It could be for honor. It could be for being lazy. There are many physical desires that a human has, and the first reason that we sin is temptation. I'd like to share with you an example. I mentioned it in a previous shmooze, but it bears repeating. If you'd like to see a pushit illustration of temptation, a number of years ago, my wife went on the SIT diet. If you folks don't know what the SIT diet is, I'll explain it to you. The SIT diet is basically you take a large wedge of chocolate cake. You take a Diet Coke. You say the words, I'm so fat, I'm so fat, I'm so fat. You then consume the entire wedge of chocolate cake and drink the Diet Coke. Many people are on the SIT diet. By the way, SIT is Rosh Yeteva, self-inflicted torture. Many people are on the self-inflicted diet, self-inflicted torture diet. My wife is one of the wisest women I know, and right after she had her first kid, she went on the SIT diet. And I said to her, listen, if you choose to be heavy, that's okay. You choose to be skinny, that's okay. But none of the self-inflicted torture diet. If you want to go on a diet, you go on a bona fide, real diet. Anyway, it was a few weeks, and the diet continued, and eventually I said, we're not doing this. So I took my wife to Weight Watchers. Now, you have to appreciate, this was by now quite a number of years ago. It was not as popular then for men to be there, and I'm about the only male in the room. And I'm sitting there. And you have to appreciate the fact that to these women, losing weight is a big deal, a very big deal, a major part of their identity, a major part of who they are. And you also have to appreciate the fact that these women were there for good reason. They were really very motivated, very much needed to be there. And I watched the meeting. Now, you have to appreciate that I'm a little bit of an outsider there. I was a young colo guy. I didn't feel like I quite belonged there. But this is what I watched. The leader gets up and says, "Okay, ladies, tell me what happened this week." And so a woman says, "Well, I was doing real great until someone at work brought in chocolate cake." I hear the other woman go, "Oh, chocolate cake." Another woman says, "I was doing great until somebody brought in a bag of Dipsy Doodle." "Oh, Dipsy Doodle, potato chips, chocolate, chocolate." They were losing it. These women were losing it right in front of my eyes. But here was the point. They were mature adults. They weren't kids. They weren't like some kind of flaky people. Regular, mature adults who were losing it right in front of my eyes. And I asked myself the following question. I don't get it. "Madam, losing weight is clearly important to you. Why don't you just don't do it? When you pass the bag of potato chips, just don't do it. You made up not to do it. You decided not to do it. You understand that if you eat this, you're going to be fat and you don't want to be fat. Just say no." Would you like to know what pshat is? Just say no is very easy to say, except when the bag comes and it looks so good. "No, I'm not going to do it." "Yes, you are." "No, I'm not." "Yes, you are." "No, I'm not." Now, I was a high school Rebbe then, so I was very, very familiar with this fight, this I want and I don't want, I do and I don't, I do and I don't, and I do and I don't. As B'nai Torah, we're very comfortable with it. But this was the first time that I got to see it from a secular vantage point, not for Torah mitzvahs, not for fight that have to do with Olam Haba. The human being is tempted. She says, "I don't want to do it," but there's a competing voice that says, "I do, I don't, I do, I don't, I do, I don't." Ah! And when it hits you all day, every day, that's temptation. And that's the first reason why we sin, and that should be pretty obvious. But there's a totally different reason that we sin that has nothing to do with temptation. The second reason that we sin has to do with something called confusion, as in, I don't get it, I'm just mixed up, I don't see consequences, I don't see results, I don't know, Olam Haba, there is going to be a world to come, I'm not going to be a world, I'm going to die, I'm going to be alive, and then Torah, Mitzvah's value, I just don't get it. And if you'd like to see an example of this, I also feel I have a very clear example of this. I've spoken about the topic of death many, many times. As a matter of fact, I used to do it regularly. I used to do this little routine about seeing my funeral. And for those of you who are familiar with it, the routine goes basically, you're in the box, there are 200 people in the room, and all eyes are in the front looking at the candles, and there you are lying in the box. "Good morning, it's your funeral." And you hear the people who say the various things, and the rabbi gets up there, and the only thing that's strange is that you're alert, you're conscious, you're awake, but you're dead. I mean, you can't move your arms, you can't move your legs, you're there stone dead in the box, but I, the conscious I, are fully there. And the rabbi gets up there and says all the nice things that the rabbi says. "Oh, rabbi, that's so nice. I really appreciate that." And you see your friends there and some people who explain to you that they did things to you during your life that they're now apologizing for, and you want to get out of the box and choke them, except you can't because you're dead. And you get a business partner who explains to you where the money went, and etc. Okay, in any case, I did that routine dozens and dozens of times. 50 times, 100 times minimum. I then wrote it in the Stop Surviving, Start Living book. I wrote that routine. Now, each chapter was written 8 times minimum. I wrote that chapter 8 times, revised it and re-revised it and re-revised it, and I knew it was going to work. Why? Because on the final draft, as I'm doing the final edits, I begin crying. I'm momish, tears coming out of my eyes. I said, "This is going to work." Now, obviously, I get it, right? Obviously, I get it that I'm going to die, right? Wrong. 10 minutes later, 2 weeks later, it's gone. Ne'elam, as if I never thought about it. Now, isn't that ridiculous? Don't you get it? Every human being dies. It's a basic fact of life. How's it, and you're constantly talking about it, and you wrote it 10 times. How's it shaya? How's it possible that you don't get it? The answer is to give free will. Hashem gave us this tremendous blindness, just absolute total oblivion. We're just clueless. And there are many, many things that we just can't see. We're utterly, completely confused. We just don't see it. Sometimes we do. We have moments of clarity. Sometimes we don't. It's just in and out. I think the best mushal I have for this is, imagine you have a young yeshiva guy, young base medrash guy. Maybe it's the first Purim that he really gets drunk, and he gets a little bit too drunk. We'll give him a name, call him Shmuel. Okay, and there you see Shmuel, he kind of did have a bit too much to drink, and he's out in the street. But he's kind of like amongst the cars, kind of like dancing with the cars, kind of playing in traffic, and yell, Shmuel, what are you doing? I'm playing with the car. Shmuel, you're going to get hit by one of those cars. I know. Smack, crack, break my back. Shmuel, you're going to get hit by one of those cars and I'm going to send you to the hospital. I know. And the doctors, they'll put my bones together with the pins when I go through the airport, the metal detector. Ding, 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 ding. What's going on? Shmuel's an intelligent fellow. On a normal day, if you speak to Shmuel, he's cogent. He's there. What's pshat? Pshat is Shmuel's drunk. His mind's eye is blinded. His consciousness is blurred. He can say words, I'm going to go to the hospital, but they don't register. The doctors are going to operate on me. He says it. He relates to it on some level, but he doesn't. He gets it and he doesn't get it. He's alert and he's spaced out. And if you'd like to understand us, that is us. We are spaced out. Sometimes a mom is there speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu right here, not 13 billion light years up in the Shemayim, mamish right here. And then 2 seconds later, I'm gone. I'm off in some thoughts somewhere, there, here, everywhere. Excuse my telling a joke. Chassidish Rebbe once says to one of his Chassidim, Chassid finishes Shemon Esrei, and the Rebbe walks over to him and says, Shalom Aleichem. And the fellow says, why is the Rebbe giving me Shalom Aleichem? And he said, listen, I saw you dominating Shemon Esrei. So? Well, I saw you went here, there, all over the world. You finally came back. I figured you have to say Shalom Aleichem to you. Now, it's a cute joke, but pay attention to your mind when you're davening. Pay attention to your conscious thoughts. Your mom is right there talking to Hashem, and then gone somewhere in a different place. What happened? And you wake back. What bracha am I up to? Where am I? What am I? What do you mean, where am I? I'm davening. What just happened in the past 10 minutes? I'm not sure. But that's if you're working on davening. That's if you're conscious. If you're really trying to pay attention, your mind goes here, there, and everywhere. And if you're honest with yourself, what you quickly understand is that we are a bit like that drunk yeshiva guy, we're spaced out. That is the second reason why we sin, because we're confused. We don't recognize there's going to come a time I will never die. Not really. Not really, really. And if I ever die, schar, onish, olam haba, it's not real. It's not really, really going to affect me. And I could say it, I could preach it hundreds of times, thousands of times, and I could really, really reach an absolute hakara, total recognition, 1 minute, and then it's gone. And that is the second reason that we sin. The first reason is temptation. I want and I don't want. The second reason is utter confusion. We just don't get it. We don't realize the consequences. We surely don't see death. And we can't really get a good grip on this thing called reality. So now, with that said, let's understand what this Medrash is saying. The Medrash is saying, if it were clear, if every one of us got it, I'm going to die. And I'm going to stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the end of my days. I'm going to stand in front of Hashem, and I'm going to have to answer, says the Medrash, we'd all lose Bechira. If we could see that moment, there'd be no Bechira. If every Jew understood that my kates will come, my time will come, and not just that, mitzvahs dramatically change me, averas damage me. If I would ever see that, says the Medrash, I'd lose Bechira. Therefore, Hashem had to hide that. Hashem had to create Misa for everyone. Has to be totally confused. This, I don't get it, I do get it, I don't get it. Why? Because now that Hashem has done that, now we have Bechira. That's what the Medrash says. And the question on this Medrash is that it's just not true. Let's imagine for a minute that Hashem eliminated this thing called confusion. Let's say we got it. Let's say we understood with absolute clarity of thought and the consequences. I say to you, we'd still have a tremendous amount of reasons to sin. we'd still blow it in a major way, and it'd still be Bechira. Now, how do I know that? I'll give you a pashut example. In the United States of America today, 65% of the population are overweight or obese. Historically unprecedented, where the average person is fat. We're not talking about like the rich people. For millennium, the only people who could afford to be overweight, Balbosa was a rich guy. Who could afford so much food? So much food that his mom is a Balbosa. That was a sign of covered, a sign of ashiras. I mean, to really be a husky fellow meant you had to have enough money to actually buy enough food, like all the time, and consume it. It was a rarity. Look at pictures even 150 years ago, 100 years ago in the United States of America, people were real thin. But why were they so thin? Not because of diet and exercise, because no one had enough food. But that's not today. Today, everyone has enough, far more than enough. It's king-sized everything, double king-sized everything, and the human being has become king and queen-sized himself. Okay, but here's the point. Everyone understands that the two single most changeable health issues that affect the human are diet and exercise. Anxiety is a big deal, but anxiety is very hard to deal with. But being overweight has a tremendous effect on your health. Exercise has a tremendous effect on health. These are two recognized facts. Everyone understands that if you exercise regularly, they say it will add 6 to 9 years to your life. Many, many complications, many, many health issues are directly related to weight. So how is it possible that most of this country is overweight? And maybe you'll tell me they don't really care. But if you look at the media, they're selling, thin, thin, thin. And we're living in an extraordinarily materialistic age. We're living in an age of the absolute total body worship, absolute total focus on external, and an extremely material age. Who you are doesn't matter. What you look like, your impression, the way people perceive you is what's valuable out there. So how's it shayach that people are overweight? And if you don't quite hear the question yet, let's use the only single criteria for measuring things in this country, in Western civilization. Everything today in Western civilization is measured by the almighty dollar. $50 billion a year are spent on diet and exercise. As a matter of fact, leave the exercise out. On diet foods, diet supplements alone, $50 billion a year are spent in this country. Obviously, it's a big deal, and it's very important to many people. And with that type of health issue, with that type of external motivation, obviously everybody today would be thin. But it's not true. Why not? Well, the answer to why not is because it's very difficult. I wake up in the morning and say, I'm dieting, I'm going to be skinny as a rail. Except, wow, look, I get that at breakfast and that croissant. Wow, those French pastries. Whoa, I get to the chassan and they leave the layers and layers of decadent chocolate. Oh. And while it may be very nice to say, I'm going to diet, I'm going to exercise, I'm going to be fit, the reality is it's very, very difficult. But here's the point. There's no confusion. It's medically proven. Everyone understands it. Everyone's motivated. How is it possible that you're not real thin? How is it shayach you're fat? The answer is because temptation is a very real nesayon. Temptation is very difficult. I want, I don't want, I do, I don't, I do, I don't. And 65% of this country is failing. But here's the point. That's just one small behavioral issue called eating. We as Torah Jews are not commanded to just be skinny. There's a whole gamut of being a Ben Torah. What that includes is not being jealous. And what that includes is being generous. What that includes is being a Balmidos, not being angry. No, I'm not going to be angry. I'm going to work on it. You have a whole gamut of Avodas Hashem, so many areas, so many things. I say to you, if there was no confusion, if we only had to battle one fight, just simple temptation, I say to you, there's a ganz fine nesayon, we'd fail miserably, and I don't understand the medrash. The medrash saying is, if you didn't have this extra added element of confusion, if there was just temptation, everyone would lose bechira. It seems that the world we live in proves the opposite. Just dealing with the issue of temptation, it seems there'd be enough failure, enough people who be miserably unsuccessful, what does the medrash mean? So I'd like to present that as a question, and I'd like to see if we could understand, in fact, what the medrash is telling us. And to do that, I'll share with you a very interesting concept. We are very comfortable with concrete physical things that we relate to. We live in a physical world. We live in a concrete world. If it's here, if I could sense it, if I could touch it, it exists. Well, that's very true, that we're very tactile. We're also very comfortable with abstract thought. For instance, electricity is a theory. For the record, no human being has ever seen electricity. No human being can see electricity. You can see the arc of lightning when it burns impurities in the air. But that's not electricity. That's a manifestation, that's a result of electricity passing through the air. Electricity itself is not visible. It's a theory. However, if you've ever taken a key and tried to put it into a wall socket, you'll see it's a pretty good theory. And your hair kind of proves that theory very, very well. I don't see electricity, but I'm very comfortable with the fact that it exists. It powers my speaker, powers my air conditioner, and I'm very much aware of it. Okay. There are other things that we're very aware of that we don't see. When you're driving your car and make a left, reconfiguring, do you want me to figure out a new direction? How does my GPS know to tell me where I'm going? So a satellite signals, three satellites, triangulation takes the, anyone remember trigonometry from high school? I sure don't, but it takes the angles of the three satellites, figures out your location, and puts it against a map, and it says to you, you are horribly lost. Would you like us to figure out a new route? Because you are at really, really bad news. Now, I don't see the satellites. I don't see the signals, but I know they exist. And I know microwaves exist. When I take my popcorn and I put it in the microwave, do you understand they sent a man up to the moon? Do you know what that accomplished? GPS and microwave popcorn. That's what NASA brought about. That's the great accomplishments, if you ask the average American. But think about it. You put your popcorn in the microwave, and 3 minutes later, ding, and it's popped. How'd that happen? There's a transducer that puts out microwaves, very, very teeny waves. The waves excite the electrons. The electrons speed up. When they move more quickly, they create friction. That friction creates a pop, and it pops. Pretty cool. I don't see microwaves, but I'm very comfortable. If you ask a scientist to tell you what this object is, he won't tell you it's a solid wood object. He would tell you what it is protons, neutrons, electrons spinning around in very, very speedy orbit. As a matter of fact, most of this is air. Most of this is not solid. If you look at this from an atomic level, it's not solid. It's mostly vacuum, mostly space. The actual substance is maintained by the electron bonds because they're spinning. That creates energy, and that creates the illusion of firmness. Now, you and I don't see it from that level, but when you put that popcorn into the microwave, 3 minutes later, ding, or if you're not yet convinced, when you look at pictures of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, entire cities, blocks and blocks and blocks, neighborhoods decimated, completely destroyed. The fat boy, that bomb wasn't that big, a few hundred pounds, but one atomic, old style atomic bomb destroys a city. They say that if they were completely able to harness the power of electron bonds, you could take an inert object, a piece of chalk. If you could release all of the energy contained within a piece of chalk, you could heat up the entire Pacific Ocean. Such energy contained within it. My eye doesn't see it. I see solid wood. I see chalk. But when scientists do amazing things with it, you realize there's a subatomic level. There are dimensions that we don't see. And we sophisticated people are very comfortable with that. We may never delve into it. We may not fully understand it. But we know it exists, and we're very comfortable with it. Chazal tell us that there are other dimensions. Chazal tell us that nothing physical can exist without a spiritual counterpart. As this physical element has a subatomic part to it, it has atoms, it has quarks, and so too every physical entity has a spiritual underpinning to it, and in fact the spiritual underpinning is what keeps the physical part in existence. When Hashem created the world, he created two dimensions to everything. the spiritual part of everything is actually what maintains it, keeps it in existence, and keeps everything physical. Nothing physical could exist without a ruchni, spiritual counterpart, keeping it in existence. And I believe that helps us understand a Medrash Pliya. The Medrash tells us that when Adam Rishon sinned, he literally caused not just death, he effectively caused the end of the world. Hashem said to Adam before eating from Eitz Hadas, "Tein daitcha shelo hachriv olami. Pay careful attention not to destroy my world. Look at the beautiful trees. Look at the sun. Look at all that I've created for you. Tein daitcha shelo hachriv olami. Pay careful attention that you don't destroy my world." When Adam Rishon sinned, he literally brought death and destruction to the world. So here's the question. How powerful was this man? How powerful was this one human being that he could destroy the world? And if you understand it from a physical vantage point, there is no answer. But if you understand it from a deeper vantage point, the answer is obvious. See, Hashem was saying to Adam Rishon, "Is you are the steward to creation. I'm giving the keys of my Sabratius into your hands. You are the one who's responsible for the spiritual underpinnings of this world. If you serve Hashem, if you do what's right, you'll give sustenance, you'll give chios, you'll give strength to the spiritual dimension. The spiritual dimension keeps the physical dimension in existence. But if you don't, you're going to wreak havoc. Into your hands are given the keys of my Sabratius. You are given the ability to sustain the spiritual element, which sustains the physical." When Adam sinned, he destroyed the underpinning, not the physical element, but the spiritual element. And by doing that, he effectively brought death, effectively decimated the world. Nefesh HaChayim explains to us that all of us were created B'Tzelem Elokim. You see, Adam was B'Tzelem Elokim. What does Tzelem Elokim mean? Explains in Nefesh HaChayim, Tzelem Elokim means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Borei. Hashem is the creator and maintainer of all of physicality. And when Hashem created Adam, he said, "You will be like me. You'll be a miniature me. I am the creator and maintainer of all of physicality, and you will be a maintainer. There are upper worlds, tremendous worlds of spiritual dimensions. They are dependent upon you." What does it mean, B'Tzelem? Hashem is the creator and maintainer of all of existence. You, Adam, are also like me in the sense that all of spiritual dimensions are totally on you. And in that sense, you are a little borei. If you'd like to know how great that concept is, the Medrash tells us that the Malachim were Bikshu Lo Mashira. When Adam HaRishon appeared on the scene, the Malachim wanted to bow down and sing Shira to Adam. What that means in plain simple language is they mistook Adam for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Malachim sing Shira to Hashem, and they saw the grandeur, the power of Adam, and they wanted to sing Kadosh, 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 because they, oh my goodness, it's a Borei, it's Hashem. And Hashem had to put Tardema, Hashem had to put sleep on the Mensch. Once he's asleep, they saw he's but a nothing. He's but a piece of clay. They no longer respected him that much. But the Havamina, before he was asleep, was this is, oh my goodness, it's Hashem. No, it's not Hashem. How's it possible? It's possible because Malachim have a greater perception than we do. They saw the greatness of a human, they saw the power given to him of human, and they saw that Hashem made him a little borei, worlds dependent upon him, huge spiritual worlds dependent, and that they mistook Kaviyachol for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Nefesh HaChayim explains to us that each of us were created B'Tzelem Elokim. Each of us have that property. Each of us are creators of upper worlds. When I learn, when I daven, when I do what I'm supposed to, when I do chesed, when I work on my midos, I'm sustaining upper worlds. I'm keeping spiritual dimensions in existence. Now, you and I don't see it. Yeah, we also don't see electrons spinning around. We don't see electricity. But Chazal tells us that's the reality. And one more step. There's a tefillah we say on Rosh Hashanah. When they blow the shofar, we say, little tefillah, Hashem, please let the malachim that come out of the shofar be ole, go up and do what they're supposed to in the proper way. We're very physical. We're very spaced out. We see a shofar, we see a bal tokeah, we see someone blowing the shofar, but we don't see the spiritual dimension. But if we were tuned to spirituality, every blast of the shofar, a new malach comes out, a powerful, brilliant, power-packed Malach comes out. Chazal tell us every single action that a human being does creates a Malach, creates a spiritual entity of power and might, or the opposite, depending on what the action you do is. We don't see it. We're spaced out. We don't realize it. But according to many Rishonim, would you like to know what Yom HaDin is? Yom HaDin is not where they take out this book. Not the Beis Din Shemala takes out this big book and starts reading from the book. The thousands and thousands of actions that you did during your lifetime created thousands and thousands of Malachim. The millions and millions of thoughts that you had created legions, leagues and leagues of Malachim. Tens of millions throughout your life, every action, every thought, every dibur, everything that you engaged in created a roshem. Not just a roshem, not just an imprint, created a spiritual entity, created a malach. And when you get up to Beis Din Shamala, it's huge, the throngs and throngs of malachim. On one side, brilliant and powerful, and on the other, whatever. And that's Yom HaDin. And at one time imagine with me for a minute what it's like. Imagine time's done. You know, we said it enough times, and we read it enough times, and taka, my days are up. Game over, curtain's done, body put in the ground, and I separate. But again, it's I, not my distant cousin, not my alter ego, not my neshama, I. The one who thinks, the one who remembers, the body's put in the ground, and I leave, and I stand in front of the Beis Din Shamala. But imagine with me for a minute, the moment before I enter there. Imagine I'm waiting in the docks. And all of a sudden this brilliant, powerful, huge malach comes over to me and says, Shalom Aleichem Tati. Hello, welcome my father. Father, I have four daughters, two sons. Who are you calling father? You don't recognize me? No. I'm the one you created. I'm the one you made. Don't you remember you were learning in the Beis Medrash that day? Don't you remember you had a beautiful, beautiful pshat in the Marsha? I'm the Malach you created. Very nice. He walks by. Another powerful, brilliant, huge Malach comes by. Shalom Aleichem Tati. My father, welcome. I've been waiting for you. Who are you? You don't remember me? No. I'm the Malach you created. Remember there was that old woman? You helped her out. You went to her apartment. I'm the Malach that you created then. Very nice. Malach after Malach, one after another, brilliant, powerful, pure, Gibori Chaya, one after another walks in. I feel like I'm on the receiving end of some political party, one after another, hundreds, thousands, brilliant, powerful, huge. But then I notice one Malach missing an arm. Who are you? Tati, you don't recognize me? No. Well, remember that day you put on tefillin and your brain was somewhere else? I'm the Malach you created. And then I noticed some Malachim are kind of gray, some are kind of black. Who are you? Remember you had those jealous thoughts? Remember you were doing things you shouldn't be doing? And then I see some are black, black as coal, crippled and ugly. Who are you? And each one after another, by the hundreds, by the thousands, by the 10,000s, proclaim, you created me, you made me. You are my creator, you are my father. For eternity, I exist because of you. Would you like to know what pshat in this chazal is? You see, pshat in this chazal is really very simple. If we human beings weren't spaced out, if we ever saw with clarity what life is really about, we would lose bechira. You know why? You might be tempted to eat a Dunkin' Donut. But when you walk in there and you see 450 calories, it may look good. But what if you had 200 cheering people? No, don't do it. Don't do it. You remember last time you created me? Last time you made me? Don't do it. And when you walked out and didn't eat it, and you had 100, 200, 1,000 cheering. Wow, yay, Baruch Hashem, you did it. If we would see the consequences of what we do, if we'd understand what we're poel, what we affect, what we create, we would lose bechira. Why? Because all temptation in the world could never tempt you to do the things you do. Oh, it looks good, but don't you see the gravity? Do you see what you've created? Do you see what you've done? We would lose bechira. You know why? Because the consequences would be so clear that no human being would be foolish enough. No human being will be blind enough to do it. And I believe that's what the Midrash is saying. If we had just temptation and understood the consequences of our action, there would be no Bechira. Why? Because it's not just about losing weight or gaining weight. It's affecting the upper worlds, affecting the spirituality of existence, creating a malach with every single thought, every single dibur. We would be literally malachei asharis. We'd serve Hashem totally, completely, day and night. Why? Because we'd see with brilliant clarity the effect of what we do. And that would not be bechira, and that would not be something we're given schar for. That's not something that's credited to our account. And so if it could be to allow for real bechira, what Hashem did was gave us two parts to the equation, temptation and confusion. It's what I call a double whammy. You see, now you want it, and it's not so clear. Now I want to do this, and it's not so bad, and I'm not going to die, and malachim, I don't know you're talking about malachim, great, come on, I'm just a regular guy, fleshik, I'm just a flesh and blood human being. All this stuff about upper world, I don't hear it, I don't understand it. And now it's a very real temptation, because now I never see reality. Now I don't see the consequences. Now when I'm tempted, it really looks good. And now when I'm tempted, I really want it, but I do, but I don't, but I do, but I don't. But what's going to be in Olam Haba?
What?
You know, the world to come. What world to come? Tomorrow. It's not going to be tomorrow. Right now, I want it. I'm living, I'm here, I'm Shmuel, I'm spaced out, I'm drunk, I'm that yeshiva guy who's drunk, I don't see the cars, I don't see the hospital. I mean, I know, yeah, hospital, yeah, but not real, not pain, not rehab, not months and months of barely trying to go through the pain. And because I have both of these things functioning, I have temptation and also I have confusion, now the Nisoyan is real. And if you'd like a mushel, I'd like to share with you a mushel, if you'd like to really understand life, go to the mall. Maybe don't go to the mall, but if you go to the mall, and watch what they call the ride simulator. I've taken my kids on Chol HaMoed into one of these. The ride simulator, you know what it is, it's a big kind of chamber with a long piece in back. Two people get in, they close the hatch, and then they play the movie of whatever it is in front, and they start blowing air on you, and they're trying to simulate what it's really like, you know, when you're falling off the Empire State Building or whatever they're trying to simulate. But that's not the hard part. You see, you're in that little chamber, the air is blowing on you, they're showing that scary movie, and then the ride simulator starts going this way, and that way, and this way, and that way. Where am I? That's life. When you wake up in the morning and you open your eyes and you say, huh, Hashem? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think so. And what about if it's in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei and you wake up with the same reaction? Oh, yeah, Shacharit. Oh, Shacharit, yeah, oh. Yeah, chillin. Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Where was that? What was that? Oh, Shmuckling. Yeah, I'm sorry. But that's what we go through all day. When you make up, I will never, ever do this again. Never. I understand the gravity. I understand the damage. I get it. And you end up doing it again and again and again and again. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand how difficult and annoying our current times are. You can't walk in the street without being assaulted with every type of nevala that has ever been envisioned or imagined. And how many times have you said, I will conquer, I won't look, I will not, and then you're there. How'd that happen? How did that occur? You took 17 shu'a d'oraisas that you were never going to go on an internet site again. And before you know it, you were there. How'd that happen? The answer is, you had a moment of clarity where I get it, I'm destroying myself. I'm destroying the essence of me. And I'm extremely, I can't even describe how angry I am with myself. And I make up, I will never, ever do it again. And that moment of clarity, I fully get it, I fully understand it. And 2 seconds later, it's gone. Gone. I don't even remember the charata. I don't even remember the achlata, the decision not to do it. I'm totally there, and I don't know where I am, but I am drunk. And I believe that there are two chidushim that are worth understanding from this chazal. The first chidush is the impact of our actions, if we ever got it. If we ever understood the gravity of what we accomplish for the good or for the bad, we would lose bechira, because that is the power of man. That is the grandeur and the majesty of man. That's the power that Hashem gave us. And if we ever got it, we'd lose bechira. But because of that, we also have to understand the very, very difficult Nisayan that Hashem put us in, the Nisayan called life. What is life? Ask people, philosophers, what is life? Life is a bowl of cherries. Life is a journey. Life is an odyssey. You know how Chazal described life? A milchama chazaka, a bitter battle. On one side and the other, in the front and the back. Read the Mesillas Yesharim's description of life. It's a bitter, bitter battle in every direction. Constantly assaulted, constantly being bombarded. Now if you tell people, life is a battle, they'll ask you, who's your therapist? Who do you speak to for counseling? Life is a battle, there are demons, and all kinds of things trying to get you. But that's Chazal's understanding of life, and that's the reality. The people who walk around, life is a bowl of cherries, life is an odyssey, are spaced out utterly, totally, and completely. They don't have a clue. They don't understand. They're living in a world of delusion. If you wake up for a moment, if you wake up from the slumber and you begin to see the gravity of your actions, you understand what life's about, you see it's a mechama chazaka, it's a powerful, powerful battle. I deal with a lot of people. A lot of people come to talk, a lot of people come to discuss issues of life. And more over the past number of years, I've been dealing with quite a number of people who are addicted. Addicted to all kinds of things, you know. In the 1950s, there was an addiction to alcohol. One thing, you're addicted to the bottle. That's not the day and age we live in. You're addicted to untold amounts of substances, all types of activities. And I'd like to share with you that there is a program that works. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous, the AA program. But it's no longer just for alcohol. It's got every addiction you can imagine. There's a group for you. And I've often said this, and I believe it's true, that I am jealous of members of AA. Whatever your addiction is, I'm jealous of them. You know why I'm jealous? You see, when you recognize that this addiction is destroying my life, destroying my marriage, destroying my existence, it may spell my death, you have a choice to make. You either deal with it or you die. But when you actually deal with it, you understand the gravity, and you have a decision that you make, and you make that decision, I will conquer, I will fight. And there's a fire within you because you recognize what you're dealing with. I read the big book, the AA, the big fat book. That's the original Alcoholics Anonymous book. And there was one part that sold me on the program. The fellow there describes how he knew he was an addict. He describes that he knew that if he took another drink, you see, he got into constant drinking bouts where he would drink himself into utter unconsciousness. And he realized that if he did this one more time, most likely he would die. That's how sick he was. And he also realized that he couldn't not take another drink. One more drink, he knew he would be in this bout of unending drinking, and he probably will die, and he couldn't not take that drink. That's addiction. That's a very, very real addiction. And when you recognize it, and you recognize that you're powerless to change it, you recognize you're in trouble. And there is a program that helps for it, and there is a system, and there are steps. And if you're a fighter, and you're able to get into the battle, it's very, very effective. The sad part is that you have to be addicted to understand what life is about. Rabosai, we're all addicted. We all got our things. Whether it's taiva, gaiva, kina, sinna, we all got it. So I'm not addicted to pills or drugs. But I'm addicted to, maybe it's my ego, maybe it's my anger. The guy's a regular good guy, except ask his kids who have to suffer. Ask his wife who has to put up with it. Ask his employees what it's like working for the guy. Yeah, but come on, yeah. He's not an addict. You know, he's not killing anybody, you know, so what? And that's the problem. He goes through life that way, addicted to his bad midos, addicted to whatever he's addicted to, maybe just simply addicted to Olam Hazeh. But he doesn't understand that he's got to work. He doesn't understand the battle of life. So there's nothing to fight. So he goes through life. Life is a bowl of cherries. Life is a wonderful odyssey. Ah, the wonderful journey called life. And he's spaced out, clueless to what life is about. When does he wake up? When he's in that box. When he's in that box and he says, idiot that I was. What was I thinking? Hashem created me, gave me this one chance to grow, to accomplish. I could have changed myself and changed the world. I could have taught off such amazing things. And what did I do? I was utterly, totally asleep. Most people don't get it until they're in the box. I'm not telling you to go become an addict, but I am telling you to go be aware that we are all addicted. We all have our things. And when you understand that life is a battle, when you understand that life is a muhammah, and you understand life, it's a bitter, bitter battle in every front, in so many different dimensions and so many different ways. And it has to be that way. Why? Because only then is there bechira. If it was just temptation alone, we would never fall for it because we'd understand the gravity of the actions. We'd understand the impact. So Hashem makes us all confused and all spaced out and illusions and delusions. Oh my goodness, what's life about? Where am I? Who am I? Where am I? There are moments, rare moments of clarity. Most of our day, most of our life are spent drunk, literally drunk, sound asleep on the at the switch. And I think what this Chazal is telling us is a tremendous yesod. That yesod is that if there was just temptation alone, there wouldn't be Bechira, because that's the impact. What Hashem said to Adam Rishon is, here's the world. Pay attention, you don't destroy it, because the keys to creation are in your hands. The spiritual dimension that keeps everything physical in existence is in your hands. Pay careful attention. Adam blew it. The question is, what are we doing? I'm also an Adam. I was also created Tzelem Elokim. If a malach sees me, would he say, oh my goodness, a little borei, look at that kadosh, is that how I'm living my life? Is that how I go? An interesting question to ask, but the biggest question to ask is, what's it going to be like when I leave? Those hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, millions of malachim, what are they going to look like? Powerful, brilliant, amazing, pure malachim, or damaged, diminutive, disgusting, black as coal? I create them every dibur, every time I'm nice or nasty, every time I'm kind or the opposite, every time I learn, every time I act in a way that I'm supposed to, every time I daven with kavana or not. Every action that I do, every thought creates a malach, has an impact, remains for eternity.